The Quandong, the jewel of the Australian bush. For a few years in the early 1980s, I found myself working in forestry research in Western Australia, and one of my colleagues was the silviculturalist, Owen Lonergan. His research focus was the highly valuable West Australian sandalwood tree, specifically its regeneration in the bush and its cultivation for commercial plantations. Once widespread, sandalwood is now only found growing a long way from civilization in the arid rangelands and deserts way out to the east of Kalgoorlie. But the world demand for sandalwood oil has not diminished, making the management of sandalwood in the wild and its commercial development even more important. I found Owen's work fascinating, and it led to enjoyable field trips to the remote bushlands where sandalwood is still widespread and commercially harvested, and to reserves where harvesting is prohibited. It was in places like the quaintly named Bullock Holes Sandalwood Reserve that Owen elucidated the complex processes by which sandalwood grows, it is a semi-parasite, survives and naturally regenerates in the harsh conditions of our arid inland. All of this brings me round to the real story here. In 1990, when my wife and I purchased our small property on the Avon River in Western Australia, one of the things I really wanted to do was to grow sandalwood, a tree with a fascinating history and unique properties. So, in year one, I planted several jam wattle trees to act as hosts and ordered about 20 sandalwood seedlings from a nursery. The seedlings were duly collected and planted next to the hosts in year two, 12 months later. Standard practice, as recommended by years of research. As our sandalwood trees grew, I used to take a passing look at them from time to time, and I often thought to myself that there was something not quite right, but I assumed that this was because they were an unusual variety or provenance. However, once they flowered and produced fruit, my doubts were confirmed. They were not sandalwood, but quandongs. The quandong is a closely related and similar-looking tree, but it does not have the valuable aromatic heartwood. The fruit are also similar, until you peel off the skin and inspect the woody stones encasing the soft and edible kernel. The quandong nuts are fissured and wrinkled, while those of sandalwood are smooth. We were not disappointed to discover that our trees were not sandalwood. It was great to have some quandong trees. We had many times in the past collected fruit from wild trees in the bush and cooked them into pies and tarts. The quandong grows into a shapely little tree, 4 to 5 metres in height. It is found all over non-tropical Australia and was known to the indigenous people by many different names. Here in the southwest, the Noongar name is Wongup. Early bushmen sometimes called them native peach, or even more romantically, the jewel of the Australian desert. They have long been one of the most important bush tucker species of the outback, not only because the fruit is so tasty, but also because of the wide range of its medicinal properties. The freshly peeled bark is antiseptic and was used by Aboriginal people to dress cuts and bruises, and the oily nut was valued for its nutrition. It is very high in vitamin C and was also used to treat skin ailments and to ameliorate toothache. Quandong fruit became popular with the early settlers in Australia for making puddings, jam and chutney. The dried stones were made into necklaces or hung from hat brims like corks to keep the flies off, were used as marbles and, when dyed different colours, as pieces in the once popular game of Chinese checkers. Quandong fruit was also a favourite food of emus, and this is one of the main ways the tree was distributed. The nut passes through the emu undigested and then germinates in the nutritious emu dropping. Quite apart from its appreciation by Aborigines and emus, the Quandong has many interesting associations with early Australian explorers. John Eyre, on his epic crossing of southern Australia, was forced to make use of bush tucker to survive, one of which was Quandong. Of the fruit, he wrote in his journal,
"When this is ripe, it is a deep red colour and consists of a solid mealy substance, about 3 millimetres in thickness, enclosing a large round stone which, upon being broken, yields a well-flavoured kernel. The edible part of the fruit has an agreeable acid taste. The shrub on which this grows is very elegant and graceful, varying from 1 to 4 metres in height."
And he added poetically,
"When in full bearing, nothing can exceed its beauty, drooping beneath its crimson load."
Ernest Giles, one of the toughest and most poetic of the early explorers, in one of his three great traverses of the land, encountered a grove of Quandong trees in the desert, covered with ripe fruit. "The most palatable and sweetest I have ever eaten," he wrote. I also love this line from Eon Idris's account of the expedition to find Lassiter's Reef. "One evening in the depths of central Australia, the men camped among the hills dotted with Quandong trees, those rich scarlet plums of the desert." Physiologically, Quandong is an interesting tree, being described as a semi-parasite. Although the tree's green leaves are capable of photosynthesis, converting carbon dioxide from the atmosphere into carbohydrates and sugars, it is pretty much dependent on a nearby host tree to provide it with nitrogen and other nutrients from the soil. The Quandong roots attach themselves to the roots of the host plant and are able to extract moisture and nutriment from them. Many different species can act as hosts, but the jam wattle is probably the best. By dint of its natural toughness and its access to other plants' root systems, Quandong is highly drought resilient. They are the only fruit trees to survive in the arid outback without irrigation. Quandongs are also very fire resistant. Although a hot fire will kill the mature tree, the roots survive and produce suckers that quickly replace their parent. In fact, the tree will even send up root suckers without a fire. One of our Quandong mother trees has a family of about 25 offspring nestled under her skirts, all having emerged as suckers from the roots. The first thing we found out about the Quandong trees we accidentally planted at Guambagine was that they only produced fruit in any quantity in years of above average winter rainfall. The second was that the ring-necked parrots loved the fruit just as much as we did. And if we were not on the alert, they would get to it before we did, stripping the ripe fruit with ruthless efficiency. For about 15 years, we did not get a single ripe Quandong. Then one year, we struck it lucky. It was a good winter with abundant rainfall, and the parrots were elsewhere. Our trees flowered prolifically and were soon loaded with fruit, initially green, but then weathering to a bright scarlet by early summer. A visiting friend, an Englishwoman, thought that the fruit were baubles with which we had decorated the tree as a manifestation of the Yuletide spirit. Since that first crop, we have been lucky for several years now, getting a nice crop of Quandong fruit nearly every October. The trick is to forestall the onslaught of parrots by picking the fruit the moment they turn red. Individual fruits on the same tree do not ripen simultaneously, but over a period of 2 to 3 weeks. This means that to harvest a tree, you need to return to it 3 or 4 times, getting the ripe ones just before the parrots. With a nod to pioneering tradition, we always collect in billies for transport to the kitchen for cooking, or to the cupboard for storage. They keep well, at least for a couple of months in our experience. Picking and preparing Quandongs is quite easy, although a stepladder or the back of a ute might be needed to get at the fruit on the taller trees. The red flesh from the ripe fruit is easily peeled off. Then the nut is discarded or cracked open to enable the kernel to be eaten. The flesh can be eaten raw. It has a unique flavour, tangy and zesty, quite unlike the taste of any other fruit. But our favourite approach is to stew them and make a pie or tart. Actually, I find the taste of stewed kwandong a trifle too tart and prefer them stewed with a few slices of Granny Smith apple or a stick or two of rhubarb. Sugar must always be added, and generously, to the stewing process. I've not tried it, but an old pastoralist mate of mine once told me how his mother used to make a kwandong sauce, which she would use as a glaze on the Sunday roast pork. He smacked his lips remembering it. I have also seen tantalising recipes for kwandong jam, scones, mustard, chutney, and even kwandong brandy liqueur. But if the kwandong is to be immortalised, then I think it should be in this description of the typical Australian menu, which I read in an old bushman's handbook. The menu was kangaroo tail soup, curried wallaby, and kwandong pie. I could sit down to such a meal right now, followed by a kwandong liqueur.